Welcome to SCOTUScast, Former Bankruptcy and Tax Liability Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On May 14, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Hall v. United States. The question in this case was whether capital gains tax liability resulting from individual debtor's sale of a farm during the course of a Chapter 12 bankruptcy was a tax liability incurred by the estate, and for that reason could be treated by a statute as an unsecured liability dischargeable on the bankruptcy proceedings. In an opinion authored by Justice Sotomayor, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that the capital gains taxes were not incurred by the estate and thus were neither collectible nor dischargeable in Chapter 12 bankruptcy proceedings. Justice Sotomayor's opinion was joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia, Thomas, and Alito. Justice Breyer filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, and Kagan. To discuss the case, we have Andy Graywall, who is an associate professor of law at the University of Iowa College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Graywall.
Hi, this is Andy Graywall at the University of Iowa College of Law, and I'm here to talk to you for a few minutes about the Supreme Court's recent decision in Hall v. United States. Hall involved an extremely dense question of statutory interpretation involving both the Bankruptcy Code and the Internal Revenue Code, and the court's opinion reads much like a technical repair manual. But there are important policy issues hiding behind the technical questions, and the opinion also raises some broad issues about statutory interpretation theory. But before I get to the big picture items, let me discuss the legal issue decided by the court. I'm going to simplify things a little bit, because otherwise we're going to have to deal with various statutory cross-references, special terms, and bankruptcy jargon. This simplified discussion should nonetheless help you understand the key legal issue in Hall. So, what was that issue in Hall? The Hall case, the Supreme Court was asked to determine the priority status of post-petition tax liabilities incurred by a farmer on the sale of farm assets in a Chapter 12 proceeding. Now, that issue probably sounds like a mouthful, so before digging into it, let me give you a little bit more background on Chapter 12, which should facilitate your understanding of the issue. Generally speaking, Chapter 12 provides favorable bankruptcy rules for farmers. All else being equal, a farmer would prefer to go through Chapter 12 bankruptcy than bankruptcy under another chapter. Qualifying under Chapter 12, the farmer's bankruptcy plan must provide for full payment of some special types of debts. If his plan doesn't call for the payment of those special types of debts, he can't qualify under Chapter 12, and he has to seek recourse elsewhere. Ignoring any exceptions, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, a federal tax debt is a type of special debt that a farmer has to pay to qualify under Chapter 12. But Congress recognized that this requirement often prevented a farmer from actually qualifying under that chapter. For example, suppose a farmer wanted to sell some farmland to pay off a secured lender, like a bank, whose debt was also entitled to special treatment. If the farmer sold his farmland to pay off the bank, but the IRS wanted to collect taxes on the sale, the farmer might not have enough money to pay off both the bank and the IRS. This would make it impossible for the farmer to qualify under Chapter 12. Under that chapter, he has to pay off both the bank as a secured lender and the IRS. So in 2005, Congress decided to make things a little bit easier for farmers. In the 2005 amendment to the Bankruptcy Code, Congress said that when a farmer sells a farm asset, the taxes resulting from the sale won't qualify as special liabilities that must be paid. So in the prior example, if the farmer sold his farmland and only had enough money to pay off the bank, that'd be okay. He wouldn't also have to pay off the IRS to qualify under Chapter 12. This 2005 amendment makes it clear that taxes incurred prior to the filing of a bankruptcy petition fall under the exception. That is, the 2005 amendment unequivocally takes away the special status of pre-petition tax liabilities. In Hall, the Supreme Court had to decide whether post-petition tax liabilities also lost their special status, a point on which the statute is not totally clear. The 2005 amendment and related statutes don't squarely say anything about post-petition tax liabilities, although they generally provide that taxes incurred by the bankruptcy estate are eligible for the bankruptcy exception. The issue in Hall thus turned on this language. When the Halls sold their farmland after filing for bankruptcy, were the related taxes incurred by the estate? If so, these taxes would lose their special status and the Halls could qualify under Chapter 12 of the Bankruptcy Code without paying the IRS. If, on the other hand, these post-petition tax liabilities didn't lose their special status, that would mean that the Halls would have to pay the IRS and the bank if the farmer wanted to qualify under Chapter 12. So as you might imagine, the Halls argued that the taxes incurred on the sale of their farmland were, again, incurred by their estate within the meaning of the statute. After all, they had made the sale only after filing for bankruptcy and after a bankruptcy estate had been created. But the Supreme Court rejected that argument and concluded that the taxes were not incurred by the Halls' estate. The taxes were incurred by the Halls in their individual capacities. Consequently, the benefits of the 2005 amendment were not available. In determining that the taxes weren't incurred by the Halls' estate, the Supreme Court focused not just on the bankruptcy code, but on technical provisions of the Internal Revenue Code, which govern when a separate taxable entity arises during a bankruptcy proceeding. Under those provisions, a separate taxable entity arises in some bankruptcy proceedings, but not in others, like in Chapter 12 proceedings. According to the court, this was enough to resolve the case. Since Chapter 12 estates aren't separate taxable entities under the tax code, they could not incur taxes for purposes of the 2005 amendment to the bankruptcy code. Although the court's opinion addressed various counterarguments, the provisions in the tax code were really the beginning and end of the matter. Again, the court concluded that because no separate taxable entity arises in a Chapter 12 proceeding, taxes incurred during that proceeding are incurred by the debtors individually and not by the bankruptcy estate. Now, it's easy to think that the Hall opinion reflects only a dry analysis of two complex statutes, and there's some truth in that. But there are some aspects of this opinion that are worth taking note of, even if you aren't interested in the highly technical bankruptcy and tax law issues. First, the court's implicit use of the congressional awareness canon merits some attention. Under the congressional awareness canon, a court usually assumes that Congress is aware of existing law when it passes legislation. For example, courts frequently presume that Congress is aware of all of the provisions of the bankruptcy code, even if it amends only a small part of the code. Along the same lines, courts will also frequently assume that Congress is aware of the entire tax code, even when it amends only one tax provision. Critics of the congressional awareness canon frequently argue that Congress cannot possibly be aware of an entire statutory scheme, and that the aggressive use of the canon leads to the frustration of congressional intent. That argument might be particularly apt in the Hall case. In Hall, the court found that the meaning of the 2005 amendment to the bankruptcy laws turned on the meaning of two provisions in the tax code that weren't part of the 2005 legislation. That is, the court presumed that Congress must have been aware of sections 1398 and 1399 of the Internal Revenue Code in determining its intent regarding the 2005 amendment to the bankruptcy code. Perhaps this stretches the congressional awareness canon too far. It's one thing to say that Congress is aware of the bankruptcy laws when it amends those laws, but it's quite another to say that Congress is also aware of the tax laws when it amends the bankruptcy laws. On the other hand, the application of the congressional awareness canon always rests on a legal fiction. Even when Congress just amends the bankruptcy code, it's a stretch to actually say that the entire Congress was aware of the entire bankruptcy code when it passed legislation. Congressional awareness canon rests on a need to make sense of the law, not on the belief that legislators are actually aware of existing legislation. In this regard, the court was probably right to use the Internal Revenue Code to construe the bankruptcy code, even though, again, to a layperson, or to most lawyers even, the references might come across as obscure. Aside from the issue regarding the congressional awareness canon, the lineup of justices in the Hall case is notable. Hall was a 5-4 case, and the majority consisted of the four conservative justices and, surprisingly, Justice Sotomayor, who was the opinion's author. In past cases, Justice Sotomayor has shown that she disagrees with Justice Scalia's approach to statutory interpretation and that she embraces a strong intentionalist approach. Yet not only did Justice Sotomayor join the conservative justices, she wrote a strongly textualist opinion for the court. The textualist bent of the decision is all the more surprising given that the intentionalist approach would mandate the opposite result here. As Justice Breyer's dissent showed, the precise purpose of the 2005 amendment was to provide relief to farmers just like the Halls, that is, farmers who had to sell their farmland and could not pay off their creditors because of a huge IRS tax bill. Given the clear legislative history, one might have expected that Justice Sotomayor would have joined Breyer and the other dissenters and turned the four-person minority into a five-person majority for the court. In fact, Justice Sotomayor has in past cases specifically rejected the type of textualist analysis offered by Justice Scalia, but here she went along with it, even though that approach was outcome determinative. Speaking of outcomes, Senator Grassley, who was the thrust behind the 2005 amendment, has taken notice of the Hall case. He's publicly expressed his disappointment over the court's decisions, and he has stated that when the amendment was under consideration, he convinced his colleagues that the IRS couldn't get blood out of a turnip and that it was entirely appropriate to forego IRS tax claims in bankruptcy proceedings. Going forward, Senator Grassley has promised to introduce legislation overturning the result in Hall, meaning that the difficulties imposed by the decision might soon be eliminated. In other words, the Supreme Court likely has not had the last word on how farmers like the Halls will be treated. And with that, I will sign off. I hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.